Hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio, and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to Heaven and Hell by The Who, live at Leeds. I hope you enjoy it.
Where you go if you've done nothing wrong.
The Who Live at Leeds is often regarded as one of the finest live albums of all time, and with performances like that, you can certainly see why it earned that moniker. Anyway, hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio, and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. So yeah, The Who Live at Leeds is a fascinating album because it was recorded on the Tommy Tour from 1969 to 1970. Basically, they toured all over America, they did Woodstock, and they made loads of recordings of loads of the concerts there. And they took them home and basically burned them because they didn't like them. And then on Valentine's Day of all days in 1970, they played Leeds University and captured that phenomenal performance. Up next, we've got something a little bit different from a songwriter, musician and content creator who he makes some really interesting stuff. He's a bit of a kind of chameleon when it comes to genres. He loves everything and yeah, he makes some really cool stuff. He's one of arguably the most important songwriters, I think, of the past decade because of the way he's influenced people through his use of YouTube. The guy in question is Andrew Huang. He's a Canadian YouTuber, and basically he's got his own studio, and he makes the most amazing music possible. He's built his own modular synths, he can play drums, he can play guitar, and he just has so many, like, weird, diverse influences. Like, he loves hip-hop, he loves classic rock, he loves jazz, and he basically combines it all into one, and, like, when he does, like, a track, he makes a video about the track being like, oh, this is how I made this song, this is what inspired it. And this one was really cool because I saw the video for it and thought this would be a great song to play on Top of the Progs. Basically, he found this drum groove he liked in the time signature 732, basically. And he started playing it, created a loop out of him playing this drum beat in 732. Then he basically added a bunch of other parts. Then he got his crazy friend, this guy called the Button Masher, who's like a classically trained organist, like to play like a synthesizer that sounds like an old Nintendo console over the track. And they create something really unique and really cool. This is Seven by Andrew Huang and Button Masher. We'll be right back. I absolutely love that. I mean, he's just so inventive. Like, just the kind of amount of joy and kind of fun that comes through on Andrew's tracks is just absolutely unbelievable. There's just so much kind of goodness to go out in that. I really enjoy it. And Button Masher's, like, synth playing, his synth soloing, that is just unbelievable. But yeah, the video where Button Masher and Andrew Wang make this, basically Andrew does the drums and, like, basically the outline of the song and that kind of groovy guitar bit. Then he takes it over to Button Masher's, and Button Masher has this, like, two console MIDI keyboard setup with organ foot pedals, and he plays those chords and solos in live and just improvises them, and I just absolutely love that. It's so different, so quirky, and so fun, and I thought it would be perfect for Top of the Progs. Now, this next one is also some kind of tenuous new progressive rock. So basically, in the 1980s, Emerson, Lake, and Palmer wanted to get back together, basically, and yeah, I think they did Love Beach, you know, it was a mistake, they broke up, there was no good music on Love Beach, Love Beach is terrible, and they kind of did their own thing, solo albums in the early 80s, Carl Palmer did Asia, and then, basically, Keith Emerson and Carl Palmer kind of thought to themselves, I'm not sure which one came first, there were basically two ELP offshoots in the 80s, one was Emerson, Berry and Palmer, basically, and that's basically this, the band basically started as three, and then there was EL Powell, which is Emerson, Lake and Cozy Powell, but the first one, which was Keith Emerson, Carl Palmer and Robert Berry, is a really interesting incarnation, because they did an album and it was just titled Three. I think it's called To the Power 3, To the Power of 3, something like that. But they recorded an album. It's got some good music on there. It's decent. But Robert Berry, basically, he was the Greg Lake. He was the bassist. He was the singer. He did some guitar on the album. Keith did his keyboard mastery, and Carl did his drum thing. And it's, yeah, there's some good music on there. Overall, it's a bit of a dud. It's kind of a bit of its time. But they went on tour. They played the old ELP stuff, and that was pretty exciting. But anyway, over the years, Keith Emerson and Robert Berry always kind of thought to themselves, wouldn't it be funny to, and fun and really enjoyable to do something again together. And basically Keith Emerson would call up Robert Berry and say, oh, I've got this riff, maybe we could use this for the project. Anyway, Keith Emerson, as we know, sadly passed away in 2016. But then in 2017, Robert Berry got permission from Keith Emerson's estate to use the parts that Keith Emerson had written. So they created a new three album. Basically all the instruments are played in by Robert Berry. He does a great job at producing it, writing all the tracks. And it features some Keith Emerson compositions. This was the main single from the album, and it's quite a nice little fun kind of throwback to the 80s melodic neo-prog scene. This is Somebody's Watching My 3.2. Now, considering the limitations of the work, obviously Robert Berry did all it himself, I think it sounds pretty good. I quite enjoy that. It's a good fun listen. It's kind of very light-hearted, like crossover, kind of very, you know, very reminiscent of the first three where they were trying to break into 80s mid-American rock radio, that kind of thing, basically. But it's still fun, and it's still got some great... The most amazing thing about it is how much Robert Berry was able to channel the Keith Emerson sound on the keyboard. He stacked his suspended fourths and did some really cool solos, and you could probably play that to somebody and they would just recognise it as Keith Emerson straight away. The only area which I feel like it's let down a bit is the drumming. The drumming is very, it's very straight ahead, you know. If it was the true kind of three kind of sound, it would have Carl Palmer kind of doing Carl Palmer's thing and overplaying and doing like a million 16th notes at a million miles an hour for the whole track. But aside from that, really good song. I really enjoy that. Now, for those of you who've been regulars in the Progzilla chat room, and for those of you who don't know what that is, on the Progzilla site where you listen to this show, there is a section called Chatzilla, and while the show is being broadcast live, there is like a chat room where I'm there and basically fans of the show are there, and we just chat back and forth about the show and the tracks and we just have a good time. But there's a certain band who gets slagged off a lot in Chatzilla, and that band is Dream Theater. None of us in Chatzilla really like Dream Theater that much, and last week we gave Mike Portnoy a bit of a hard time. Even though he played quite well on the Avenged Sevenfold track I played, he got a little bit of a bashing, as did the rest of the members of Dream Theater. But I thought, you know what, I'm going to make peace in case Dream Theater are listening, and I'm going to play one of their tracks. This is one of the ones that's actually good. I actually quite enjoy this one. I heard it a few times. It's quite long. It's about 15 minutes long, but it's a fun song. It's got some great riffs in there, and I think it celebrates everything that's good about Dream Theater. This is A Nightmare to Remember by Dream Theater.
place. I'm greeted by a stranger, a man without a face. He said, son, do you remember? Do you even know your name? Then he shined a light into my eyes. He said, take this for the pain.
I am endlessly.
I can imagine that being a bit of a nightmare to remember, to try and play it all live, because it's really long and there's so many kind of different, all really complicated sections in that. There's the simplest bit is probably the bit with the dun 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 dun. That's probably the most straightforward bit. And even then, Portnoy can't keep his hands to himself. He's doing some like weird, intricate thing with like a splash and a hi-hat and a ride. It's a cool song. I quite enjoy that one. For all we give Dream Theater a hard time on the show for not being able to take a joke or smile, they occasionally come up with some bangers. The only bit that really loses me on that is the blast beats. It just sounds really out of place on that, like right at the end as well, after all this epicness. And the blast beats, like, they almost sound out of time, like they really even don't fit with what everyone else is doing. But I don't know, I'm not really into like heavy extreme kind of metal, so maybe it's just going over my head. But the rest of that song I really enjoy. I love LaBrie's vocal on that. I love the riffing on it is very cheeky and it's quite fun. Some great keyboard lines in there as well from Jordan Rudis. Now, after the darkness, the no humour, the kind of horrificness of Dream Theater, we've got something quite a little bit lighter next up with a song from Biffy Clyro. Biffy Clyro, an interesting band, and it took them a long time to get good. They kind of remind me of Pink Floyd a little bit in that way, where, you know, it took them like 4 or 5 albums to really kind of find the niche. But by the time Puzzle came out, they were on top form. They were kind of getting to become a big band, but it was Puzzle, then Only Revolutions, that made them like a massive kind of stadium-selling act. Well-deserved, because they've been at it for quite a few years. This is one of my favourite Biffy Clyro tracks. It's very uplifting. It's very fun. This is The Captain by Biffy Clyro.
Sure.
I really love that song, a great opening to maybe Biffy Clyro's most solid album, definitely their most commercially kind of successful album. That is kind of all the staple, you know, radio hits that we kind of still hear every time you go into a store or something like that. But no, I absolutely love that song. Next up, we've got some even more light-hearted prog with what I believe to be the finest thing Jethro Tull ever did. So Jethro Tull are well known for having a great, great, great sense of humour. Of course, Aqualung, all those kind of albums. But I think the best Jethro Tull album is Thick as a Brick. But of course, the main problem with Thick as a Brick is that it's 40 minutes long and it's just one track, basically. But towards the kind of mid to late 70s, they wanted to play Thick as a Brick and they managed to condense it down into a 10 or 11 minute medley. And this medley, performed live in 1978 at Madison Square Garden, I believe is the best thing Jethro Tull ever did. It's got the funniness, the silliness, the technical playing, the good melodies, and it's all condensed within 10 minutes of fun, and the fact that it's live makes it even more exciting. This is Thick as a Brick, live at Madison Square Gardens by Jethro Tull.
But you may well know, cast your minds back if you will to 1972 or thereabouts and spot the tune.
Really don't mind if you sit this one out. My words better whisper, you definitely say shout. I may make you feel, but I can't make you think. Your sperm's in the gutter, your love's in the sink. Saw you riding yourselves over the fields, and you make all your animal deals, and your wise men don't know how it feels. Yes, to be thick as a brick. And the sand has all the juice, they're all swept away. Hey. In the tidal destruction, the moral malaise. Hey. The elastic retreat rings the close of play. Hey. As the last wave uncovers the newfangled way. But your new shoes are worn in the heels, and your suntan is rambly peel, and your wise men don't know how it feels to be thick as a brick. That I feel is so far away. I'm a bad dream that I just can't debate. And you shake your head, yes, and said it's a shame. They pierce him, shout in the night. But make a man of him, put him to trade. Teach him to play monopoly on a stick of rain. We'll be right back.
The poet and the painter casting shadows on the water as the sun plays on the infantry returning from the sea. The doer and the thinker, no allowance for the others. The failing light illuminates the mercenary's career. The home fire burning, the kettle almost boiling, but the master of the house is far away. And the horse is stamping, their warm breath clouding in the sharp and frosty morning of the day. And the poet lifts his pen while the soldier sees his sword. And the youngest of the family is moving with authority, building castle by the sea. He bears a tiny ties to watch them all the
saw you riding yourselves over the fields. And you make all your animal deals. And your wise men don't know how it feels. Yes. Oh, to be thick as a... Thank you. Thank you kindly.
I absolutely love that. It's just so fun and so kind of tacky and Ian Anderson and brilliant. It was one of the early satellite TV broadcasts, but one of the limitations they had was that they could only basically broadcast and record for an hour, and they wanted to present like basically that you were seeing the concert from start to finish, but of course an hour's a bit short. So Jethro Tull came out, they did half an hour, then they went backstage and the cameras started filming them, they started broadcasting, and they went on stage again and basically pretended and fooled the whole world that this was the start of the concert and they were opening with Thick as a Brick. But it's just so good. I love that so much. You can tell the audience when that dun 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 kicks in, like the audience are loving it. They're clapping their hands and shouting and heckling. They are having the time of their life at that Jethro Tull concert, and I don't blame them at all. I absolutely love that. I think that's the best thing Tull ever did. You know, it's got everything, and the key thing I think is it condenses it down, and it was filmed as well, so you can show people that video. You know, if people say what's Jethro Tull like, just send them a link to that video and get them to watch it. Ian Anderson jumps about on stage and does his crazy thing. Everyone's playing really, really well. I think, yeah, if someone said, what is Jethro Tull about? You just show them that one clip and it's just absolutely brilliant. We're now unfortunately nearing the end of this week's show. I'd like to close now with one of the several classics from David Bowie's 1977 album, Low. This one's a really interesting one, as David revisited it a lot throughout his later career. He did some gorgeous live versions of it. Specifically in the 90s, he did like a bunch of like MTV acoustic kind of shows, and he played what he wanted to play. You know, he wasn't just going to do an acoustic version of Let's Dance and Life on Mars. He was going to throw some David Bowie weirdness in there as well, and this is one of the songs that kind of he reinvented. But the original version is still a great song. It's you know, it's very of the Low album. It's a pop song that's been kind of ripped apart and put back together by Brian Eno and Tony Visconti, but it's still one of his best songs. This is Always Crashing in the Same Car by David Bowie. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.
Every chance that I take, take it on the board. With kilometers I'm